the Brad Sesmatt Show, broadcasting live.
Off we go into a new week. Thanks for being with us. Jared Nielsen is the chairman of the board. If you see anything at all that goes wrong with this show, it's his fault other than internet connection. I had a great weekend. Had a spectacular, fabuloso weekend. Just filled with sports, filled with some family time, filled with, we have a daughter who hits 30 and she says, hey, I want to go have dinner with you. You do it. You just do it. You do it when they're 10, okay? But she turns 30, and so we had this great dinner, just talking about where things are in life. And when you have four kids, and when you do have kids or your kid yourself, you just, life only gets better. It does. It just does. There's hard roads, but it's had a fabulous time there. Played some golf, didn't play well, but didn't play terrible. Watched a lot of sports, chatted with a lot of fans. Of sport. So it was good all the way around. John Wilner is with us today. It is NFL draft week. We'll talk with John about that. The NCAA sent their letter over to ASU. We'll visit about that, the draft and what it means for U of A, because U of A may have a first round pick, a lineman, no less. And the Pac-12 showing dominance in the NFL draft, even though it's... So John Wilner comes up here in a few minutes. Opening comments are brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. And through the years, they've been with us for many years now. We appreciate Desert Financial Credit Union and their support. We appreciate all of our partners, all of them. I think the last time I checked, we were up to 14 partners, people and businesses, reputable businesses that said, we want to be about what you are and be involved in community. So we're self-funded. We appreciate everybody's support. So I think in the sports world, it is draft week. There's a lot of interest in what the Cardinals may or may not do. There just is. You can make the argument that they should just sit there at 4 and take Marvin Harrison Jr. and call it a day. You can make that argument, and it's valid. You can make the argument that they have so much draft capital that they could trade back and trade back and trade back and set themselves up not just for the 24 draft, but for years to come. Let's just say that you trade back enough that you stockpile some picks in 25 and 26. When you're sitting there with two picks in the first round and a very early pick in the second and a total haul that you could have and just blow it all once, you have all this money in your account. And you could say, you know what, I'm going to save some of that money for 2025 and some of it for 2026, because we're going to go hit on five really good players here in 2024. I am always been the one of on the side of the street, as others are, it's not as me, but of trading back. When you're at 4, trade back. You stink when you're at 4. That's what it is. And this roster doesn't have enough players. They made some progress last season, in my opinion. And I thought what their general manager did was smart last year. So if you just sit there and say, I need this wide receiver because it's going to be a make or break year for my quarterback, because I believe it is, then you go get Marvin Harrison Jr. and you call it a day. You've already put capital into the offensive line. You need more capital in the line. You really, if you can build your trenches up, if you can go have a draft like Seattle had last year, like Seattle hit on players all over the place, you're always going to miss on some. It's been an interesting narrative being written about, and I talked to an agent this morning about it, and that is that the draft is not as deep as it once was because NIL has come on board. I'm going to talk to John Wilner about this. It's a subset of the culture that we're in now, where the player can say, I am going to stay in college because I can go make $300,000, $400,000, and I don't have to stand around and wait. The other side of that argument is, yeah, you could stand around and wait and learn with the big boys and maybe not take off that much tread on your tire. Or college, you can just go dominate and push your number up so much so and help yourself out by just staying. And when the Cardinals are sitting there at 4, do they really have a lot on the back end of this draft that they should pursue? Or are the days of holding on to those fourth, fifth, sixth, late round picks gone? Do you just not need those? Do you trade out of those? Because you don't just take players to take players. You don't. You don't just, well, we got to take the player and use it. No, go put it on the back burner for next year or the year after. Package a couple of players. Move a pick. Do something. Do anything in order to make sure that you don't sit there every year and have no draft capital at all. I could use this argument with the Phoenix Suns. I'll get to them in a minute. Trading down is very, very smart, very, very wise. Of course, you open yourself up to, well, if they had just taken Marvin Harrison Jr. and he's in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, putting all that capital into thinking, believing that injuries aren't going to be part of it or the unexpected is out there. And so the organization, you know, trading from 4 to 7, do they find a player? Dunze, do they find a player that is just as talented and maybe they pick up an extra third? And maybe that extra third they hit on. Maybe they believe, you know what, we need help in the trenches. And later in this draft, we think there's going to be some players that we can develop, that we can hit on. Of course, it all goes back the way the draft is structured in this day and age, in particular with quarterback, with what's going on with our neighbor from about 5 miles from where I'm sitting right now, Brock Purdy. You can go through all the analysis you want. You can do that. And Mr. Irrelevant may come along and set you up in such a good position. Oh, well, he has all this talent around him. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. He had to go out and produce. So you can go spend, if you're going to go after the quarterback, how many times we see quarterbacks that don't cut it, that don't make it, that are force-fed, that are thrown out there and have the game snot kicked out of them. They're just overmatched. They're overwhelmed. They're not ready, and you're learning on the fly. Fortunately, the Cardinals aren't in that position this year. They have been in the past, Josh Rosen, Kyler Murray. So if it's me and I'm sitting there as the general manager, I can make the argument, take Marvin Harrison Jr. and let's just not do paralysis by analysis. Let's not do it. Let's just go take this guy. This is as good as it's going to get at wide receiver, and let's call it a day. I tend to look at this roster and say, I think there's more holes here that could be had if you trade back 4, 5, 6 picks. You don't trade all the way out of the top 10. You don't do that, in my opinion, unless there's players coming back. So it's fascinating this week to me what will happen with the Cardinals. This is not going to be a boring draft by any stretch of the imagination. Some years in the draft you look at and say, you know, they just need to go plug some holes. Unfortunately for this franchise, it's usually the latter. There's too many holes to plug. But I thought they made progress last year. Let's see if they can do it in years two. There's an interesting story this morning. Michael Penix Jr. decided to write a letter. Decided to write a letter because of his injury history and sent it to all the general managers out there. I don't know what that accomplishes. I don't know what that means. Is that just PR spin? So when it does happen, wherever he's drafted, it's, well, he wrote this letter. I love Penix Jr. He did not need it here in Arizona. But if I'm starting a franchise and I could choose Penix Jr. or Jaden Daniels or Caleb Williams or Bo Nix, Drake, there's so many players at that position, and most of them don't work out. I'm not sure why he would go that route. The Suns game on Saturday, they were dreadful, but it's one game. It's one game. The whole thing about NBA playoffs is it is a series of adjustments. You hate to hear that. It's a feeling out game. Game number one is, okay, let's see what they think. When people sit there and they waste hours and hours of time analyzing what happened during the regular season, those of you that have seen this show through the years, you know how much I hate and despise August fake football. Just hate it. It's a ripoff for fans. It's my least favorite month on the sports calendar, August. And then it's trickled into the regular season of the NFL the first few weeks because the regulars aren't playing yet. They're just trying to stay healthy. The product is so good at the end of the year. It's so good. Okay, the NBA is in the same boat. The product in third week in October is just not very good. It's just not. The product on Saturday, and I'm sitting there watching the game, and some friends are texting me saying, this is unwatchable. The Suns are getting screwed by the refs again. I don't know. I'm not a big Kendrick Perkins guy, ESPN analyst. I don't fall at his feet, whatever he says. But man, he was spot on when the fans have to stop crying in Phoenix about the officiating. They do. This market cries all the time about refereeing. It does. In particular with the NBA and I would say in the college sports. There's just too much crying, too much whining. Be better. You know, it's not always the referee's fault. And you don't need to go into it a minute into the broadcast about, oh boy, did we get screwed on that call. You're just playing to your audience and you're not being truthful. So the game on Saturday was different. Yeah, that's postseason NBA basketball. Live with it. Deal with it. Karl Anthony Towns is going to just batter around on the inside against Nurkic. There were times where those two looked like two bulls just fighting one another. And Hubie Brown's losing his mind. I love Hubie Brown. Hubie Brown's great. He's 90 and he's still dropping knowledge and doing it in a great way. It's like listening to Al do games through the years. He was great. But we're not going to go to the, oh, that's a foul. Yeah, you can say it is, but this is where we are now. This is where we are in April, coming into May. It's a completely different league. It just is. And people lose their minds over it. I was on the golf course yesterday with a couple of guys, bro dudes, and they were just talking about how the league is not as much fun to watch and all this stuff. And it's, no, as we go through the playoffs, it gets better and better and better. Anthony Edwards talking bleep to Kevin Durant after lighting up the Suns, that's drama. That's what we want. We want villains. We have villains. The late, great Kobe Bryant, best villain out there. Walked through the door. Everybody booed his ass, hated him. Loved it. Loved it. So, you know, it's the Minnesota Timberwolves. They haven't had much of anything to cheer for. Fans are out there. They're giving their little rally towel. Spin it around. Got the little white shirt on. Spin it around. Let's go T-Wolves. Really original stuff. They've got a squad, man. They've got a squad. And they looked younger, fresher. They played younger. They played fresher. But, you know, it's the playoffs. And it's adjustments. And I'm not going to sit here and say, boy, Devin Booker was this. I'm seeing some of that stuff. It's one game. It's one game. They've got to play better. They've got to get deeper. I don't know about Grayson Allen. Nobody's going to be able to tell me about Grayson Allen until I watch Grayson Allen tomorrow night. The good thing is they have a couple days to rest up. So that's on that front. I watched a lot of the Diamondbacks over the weekend. Merrill Kelly is the latest to go down with an injury. I can't tell you why there's all these arms in the game. It's not just the Diamondbacks that are beat up, but it feels like when I'm watching them play, it's just one of those seasons so far. We had Jody Jackson on last Thursday. Jody's with the team. She said, you know, it's April, spring training just ended. Could be a little bit of that. I could buy that. Corbin Carroll's not very good at the plate right now. It's not breaking news. Hitting 220. Saturday struck out three times. You lose Merrill Kelly, and Circoni comes up from Reno and pitches pretty well. Pitches pretty well. They've got this stretch where they're in St. Louis tonight. And I don't know what the travel agent was thinking, but they go from San Francisco to St. Louis to Seattle. Okay. They come home a week from today. And a week from today, it's the Dodgers for three. And then it's the Padres for three. And then the Dodgers. Or Dodgers and Padres. And for me, that's what I'm looking at. Okay, you've hit some rough spots. They're not out of contention by any stretch. The late, great Pedro Gomez would tell us on this show many times, you can't win the division in April, but you certainly can lose it. Or you can certainly lose postseason early in the season. And they're just kind of circling the drain. The Dodgers are coming alive. Yesterday, they didn't look very good against the Mets over the weekend. That took in a lot of baseball. The injuries are concerning. Nelly Korda versus Scottie Scheffler in prime time. Would you watch? I don't know if you saw this morning, Scheffler won again. He won at the Heritage. Nelly Korda won her fifth in a row over on the ladies' side. I watched both of them. We're seeing greatness on both tours. And with the explosion of women's sports, if you're not familiar with Nelly Korda, become familiar with her. That caught my eye over the weekend. That's pretty much it. I mean, there's a few other things I'll get to with Wilner. We will do that next, John. Wilner, all things on the college football and college sports front as we do every Monday. That's next. Monday, chopping it up with the great John Wilner, talking all things college football and college athletics, I should say. You can find John over on X, Wilner Hotline. His content, of course, is on the website as he does his thing across the fruited plain, as we like to say. This is NFL Draft Week, so let's start there. John, the way that the NIL stuff is going, I've read, I've heard, I've spoken to people on the NFL side that NIL is actually helping the college game become better because some players would be drafted if there was not NIL. They would just jump into the league and we'd see more of a dilution of talent. So all the banging on NIL, let's start there, that really the college game is being helped by this.
Absolutely. There are fewer underclassmen. Kids who have eligibility left, fewer of those guys are making the jump to the NFL. You know, the numbers bear it out. It's one of the consequences from NIL that maybe not wasn't foreseen. You know, we know the NCAA argued that, oh, NIL will ruin amateurism and fans won't care as much. And the ratings data suggests that was a false argument by the NCAA. And now here we have that it's helping college sports in another way by keeping kids in school. And I think we'll see that same deal with the NBA draft, with fewer guys turning pro in the NBA. So yeah, we're going to get better upperclassmen. I don't know that it necessarily affects the quarterbacks quite as much, but certainly other positions. The game is better.
I had a friend of mine, he's a diehard Georgia Bulldog fan. He lives in Texas, big cigar, I call him. He called me about Rashada, because when Rashada went to the portal, which, by the way, was not a surprise, and Georgia was linked to him, he said, I am so done with this, even as a Georgia Bulldog fan. So that's easy to say in April. But get back to me when you're playing Alabama the third week in September. So we're hearing the gnashing of teeth about, oh, the game's ruined. I don't even know who these players are and all that stuff. That is off-season nonsense. Are we on the same page on that?
We are. Everybody's still got an alma mater. Right? Or a team you grew up rooting for. You're not going to stop rooting for that team, watching them on TV, buying tickets, buying merchandise, donating athletics, because these kids are transferring all over the place. You're still going to have your allegiance and passion. That's one reason, you know, college football, I don't know that it's fully immune to the portal and to, you know, outside forces, but because everybody's got an alma mater, it's pretty insulated from that. Your fans are going to root for their schools no matter what. You still root for the name on the front of the uniform, right?
Yeah, I mean, that leads us over to Arizona State with what happened Friday
morning. ASU challenges their fans like few other schools in the country.
Yeah. Turns out that Kenny, if I'm to believe his social, and I do, landed some very good players. That all sounds great. And gets everybody, oh my gosh, look at us. We've got it turned around. Get back to me if they're here for 4 years.
Like, get back to you if they're there for 2 years, Brad. Two.
Yeah. Oh, I know.
Here's a great example, right? Cormani McClain, the number one ranked cornerback prospect in the country a year ago, commits to Dion, plays for Colorado, doesn't play a whole lot, and now he's gone, right? Five-star first round pick, huge deal. He's gone after 1 year. We're seeing that all over the place. The recruiting still matters, both for transfers and high school kids, but you can't make any assumptions about long-term impact. It is a year-to-year deal.
Yeah, no, there's no question about that. Zero impact. It's something to get people excited in mid-April, and that's really about it. What did you make out of the NCAA?
But it's good for ASU. For ASU, it's good, though, because they need something to get their fans excited to buy tickets, right? Because the news has been so bad, so dreary there, that this uptick, and I think they are going to have in the next 48 hours, ASU is going to have a lot of kids commit for next year, and it's going to be a real good recruiting season, and that will help generate a little bit of energy and enthusiasm. So they need everything they can get.
Yeah, when you're flatlined, which they are,
yep,
and you get the announcement, and there still is the back end of that announcement, and anybody who tries to tell me this is a whole bunch of nothing is just, I guess they did get their diploma or they're on the payroll at ASU. And that's the only way you can explain that this isn't something that's bad news, other than it gets out of the way. What did you make out of it? Is this completely case closed? It doesn't read like it.
It's not case closed. I think for the folks who still have to, you know, finish up with the NCAA, but as far as a material impact on ASU, it's basically case closed. The scholarship reductions, the recruiting restrictions, they're going to have just, I think it's going to be a slight impact on ASU competitively moving forward. For the most part, the Sun Devils can kind of move forward now. You know, the postseason ban, even though they, you know, I still don't know why they announced it 5 days before the season, but certainly banning yourself helps, right? We saw that with Arizona basketball too. Postseason ban helped. I think that Dillingham can kind of move forward at this point. You know, the thing that really is a head scratcher for me is obviously Herm Edwards, right? Reports are Herm Edwards' responsibility. He's got to show cause, which doesn't matter to him. He's not going to coach again in college. Right. But the fact is ASU cut Herm Edwards a deal for half his remaining amount on his contract. I don't understand that. To me, that is gross negligence. He was guilty. They could have fired him with cause. They did not. That's millions of dollars that it looks to me like the university just gave Herm out of goodwill, millions of dollars remaining on his contract. I do not understand that.
Antonio Pierce, another friend of mine sent me a text yesterday who's very tied into ASU. He said, why is nobody asking Antonio Pierce about this? It doesn't matter. Antonio Pierce, he never cared. This is like anybody who thinks like pitchforks up, go Devils, rah, rah, rah from Antonio Pierce. Or there's the, oh, well, he was a Wildcat, so they embedded him. I guess there's a grassy knoll somewhere for you. Knock yourself out.
Huh. I mean, it's real. Embedded space. That's a space laser type conspiracy theory there. No, you know, that's the thing, though. These guys go into the NFL. We're seeing with Michigan gets hit. Harbaugh is living out of his RV on the beach coaching the Chargers, right? Gone. Adios. Same thing with Pierce. Pierce never cared about the rules. You know, I'm sure he hasn't given it a second thought, and he's moving on as head coach of the Raiders, and ASU has been left to pick up the pieces. That's the way the system's set up. ASU is not the first example of that.
John is having a little bit of technical stuff, so just roll with us today. Wi-Fi is one of those tricky things. John Wilner is with us for a couple of minutes. Wilner Hotline, you can
find it. It's space lasers.
Space lasers. It's people embedded. On the draft this week, the intrigue is, I feel like, as we're sitting here today, now here in Arizona, do they keep four, do they trade back? But I think the overarching interest is Michael Penix Jr. It feels to me like it's, how high does he go? Because Williams is going to go number one. Is Penix Jr. going to go up? Is Bo Nix going to go up? There's all this interest about the conference formerly known as the Pac-12 that's about to just go. And I think that's the big storyline around this, John, is this great conference put all these great players, and we're going to sit here the next four nights starting Thursday and see them go off the board and say, what have we done here?
What have we done? Yeah. Interestingly enough, Pac-12 could make history as it becomes history. There's a chance it's going to set a conference record for the most number of draft picks since the draft went to seven rounds. Pac-12 could have more kids picked than it ever has, right? And this will be it. And that reflects what we saw on the field, high-quality football last year. Penix, to me, is so interesting because of the difference between what we saw with our eyes in his performance and what the NFL draft projections are, you know, which a lot of them have him going in the second round. Part of that's because of his injury history and teams being wary of spending a first-round pick on a kid that's had multiple season-ending injuries. But you look at him and you think, based on performance and his ability to throw the ball, I mean, top five pick, right? So it will be real interesting to see if he climbs into the first round. A lot of people think he could end up with the Raiders, speaking of Antonio Pierce, right? We'll see. Bo Nix seems to be pretty solid in the middle, you know, in the 10 to 20 range, the kid from Oregon, and then Caleb Williams at the top of the draft. So three Pac-12 quarterbacks could go in the first round.
We were in, as a staff, we were in on an NFL media conference call. And in this conference call, the question was asked about the U of A. Jacob Cowling, Jordan Morgan, maybe a first round pick, second round pick. John, this was a franchise or a school just a couple of years ago that was the worst in America. And they got it turned around after someone was finally shown the door. What are you hearing around U of A in the draft, or what do you believe will happen with U of A players in the draft?
Yeah, I think Cowing's going to end up middle rounds, 4-5, maybe 6. But Morgan could end up being a first-round pick. Arizona has not had a lineman picked in the first round since there were leather helmets. I mean, it has been forever. And the fact that they've got a guy like that reflects the improvement on their lines of scrimmage that we saw last season. Jedfish did a good job upgrading their lines. They were bigger and stronger, much, much better. So and that'll be good, even though Fish is gone. Having a lineman picked high will help Brent Brennan, the current coach, recruit linemen into his program in the next couple of years.
Yeah, and next year at this time, we'll be talking about two likely first-round picks or first-second-day picks in Fafita and T-Mac. And so they've got some momentum going there in Tucson.
They do. Well, and the issue for them, though, is they're going to have expectations this season that that program has not had in forever, right? Maybe since Desert Swarm. How are they going to manage those expectations? Will Fafita and T-Mac and those Manu, all those guys, how focused are they going to be on the season at hand? You know, endorsement deals, NFL draft, hangers on, you know, people on campus. There's all of a sudden going to be a lot of distractions that Arizona hasn't had to deal with. There's going to be a target that Arizona hasn't had, and it'll be interesting to see how they navigate that for team chemistry and leadership. I'm really looking forward to seeing how Arizona responds to being in the role of a favorite for the first time in so long.
I'll let you cuff that. Appreciate your time as always. Have a great week.
Thanks a lot, Brett.
That's John Wilner, and we're back with more after this timeout.